TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo.
Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. I said, ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Gorilla tactics. Whoa.
As we are brought in by the fire tones of the Tongan, who, by the way, is G1 season right now, so shout out to Jay White. But yes, we give all deference to the Tongans, but you are listening to another episode of The Outsider's Edge. It's your boy Rance, a.k.a. Ray Cash. And as always, with me, I got my brother Dakota to my Kenny. By the way, I haven't paid attention to the G1. I got a conversation coming next week to get caught up on that. Is Coda winning?
I can tell you that I don't know who's currently winning, but I can tell you that this year's Yanu upset victory was against John Moxley.
I heard that. By the way, so, I'm with Kyle Morris, y'all. Kyle Morris, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, y'all. Those of you who are, like, religious or whatever, say a little prayer for me. I got back to school starting, so I get a new set of students coming up here in a week or two. And, you know, other people's kids, y'all. Other people's kids. That's all I'm going to say.
That's the whole conversation. yeah.
Speaking of other people's kids, let's talk about Dusty Rhodes' kids and their interesting little wrestling promotion.
The American Dream.
The American Nightmare's wrestling promotion done sold out their first TV taping. That's a big deal.
Give them their credit, man.
Yeah, that's a big deal. AEW sold out their first TV taping in DC. It's a huge fucking deal. Huge deal. They're also showing some intelligence in their second and third TV tapings. Tell them why, Brother Rance.
They apparently have announced that they're going to do Boston and Philadelphia afterwards, week two and week three. And first and foremost, it's smart that they announced it after the other show sold out, because a lot of people who are in the tri-state area probably were going to drive to D.C. for that first show. So it's smart to keep those separate. But instead of running the Bruins and the Celtics arena and the Sixers and the Flyers arena, they're running mid-size. So I think they're running like Temple University's arena and some random arena somewhere in Boston. And that's
for y'all that don't understand why it's a big deal. If they sold out the bigger arena, that's great. That's awesome. And I'm not saying that they couldn't do it. But if you don't, it looks a lot better to have 9,000 seats sold in a 10,000-seat arena than it does to have 10,000 seats sold in a 20,000-seat arena.
I'll do you one better, Kyle. A 500-seat arena that looks full and engaged looks a million times better than a 20,000 seat arena that's half full and nobody looks like they care.
Well, and you also, with a full house, you can do camera tricks, A, to make it look like a bigger crowd.
Absolutely.
But B, the acoustics is the big part of it.
Good point.
You know, if I got 9,000 people in a 10,000 seat arena, if they start chanting, or if they get really into a match, or if they start booing a heel or whatever, it's going to be loud. It's going to pick up on the microphones. It's not going to seem like this quiet little echo chamber where everybody's sitting on their hands. If you've got a stadium that's only half full, everybody has to scream at the top of their lungs to be heard.
And you're still not going to hear them very well.
Because there's nowhere for that sound to go.
So here's a question for you while we're talking about the very first episode. Who do you think – so the first main event – well, let me run this down. The matches that are already announced for that show, the first match is going to be Cody versus Sammy Guevara. That's going to be like the opening match of the show, the first match.
Shout out to Sammy.
Shout out to Sammy. That's not the spot Sammy should be in, but shout out to Sammy nonetheless.
No, no, no. Opening is the spot that Sammy should be in. Opening against Cody.
Okay, good point.
Not yes. necessarily right spot, wrong opponent.
Better said. Much better said. they're also going to crown the first ever women's champion on that show. But the main event apparently is the Elite, Kenny and the Bucks, versus Jericho and two mystery partners to be announced. And the rumors are that these aren't Meltzer rumors. These are straight from the horse's mouth. Jericho saying it's huge and it's somebody unexpected, which makes somebody think that it's somebody not currently announced or signed. So
if it's who I'm thinking of, I will make fun of them.
Because I think we're thinking the same people.
Uh-huh.
I think it's Enzo and Cass.
And I will rip them so hard if they sign the realest guys in the room.
No, free agents.
I will rip them so hard.
This is all I want to know. And for the record, I understand how we all feel about Enzo.
But here's why I need to rip them for this. I haven't even explained why this deserves the ripping.
Okay.
Because there are two big reasons. Okay. Two big reasons. Reason number one. What was one of our biggest knocks of Impact over the years? Anytime they started to build momentum, what was one of our big things? What would they do, Brother Rand?
Sign a WWE cast off and push them over everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and what was one of those criticisms that the IWC always had about indie promotions? They would over-promote WWE cast-offs.
Mm-hmm.
But the double hypocrisy pill here, and the reason why I'm not even signaling, I wouldn't even be singling out the Elite as much as I will their stans,
mm-hmm.
is their stans don't like Enzo and Cass.
Enzo more than Cass.
But even Cass, but the IWC was very vocally critical of both of them as performers.
Absolutely.
Less critical of Cass as a wrestler, but still critical of Cass Absolutely. In general.
Absolutely.
So these were not people that they liked, but I guarantee you that if that's who Jericho brings out, people who were sitting here shitting on Enzo and Cass and talking about how they're a two-star match and blah, 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 we'll be like, oh, this is such a brilliant signing. Yeah, they can't wrestle, but they can talk. Oh, funny, but when we said that same shit, we were just fangirling. I
do want to say this, though, because I'm a big believer in when somebody shows real change and tries to be a different person than they were, you need to acknowledge that.
Cass can be forgiven. Enzo, yes. Not so much yet.
Everything that Cass has done since he's left WWE and had the seizure, with the exception of whatever that was at the Supercard of Honor, whatever that was, the G1 Supercard, he really looks like he's taking his life back, tried to get himself together. He's gotten clean. He's back in shape. He's being treated for his depression and his anxiety. Like, so I want to give him the credit for that. Enzo's always going to be Enzo. But I can't think of who else it would be, because who else would it be that they would promote?
I can't think of anybody else that it could be that they would promote as like, oh, it's huge and shocking. Because who has left a promotion recently? Oh,
one more group.
Hit me.
LAX.
Ooh, now I would not make fun of them for that at all. That would actually be a really smart signing.
It would, but they wouldn't match with Jericho. But I guess it doesn't matter because it's the first show. Well, actually, it does matter because if this is the main event of their first show ever, no matter how good LAX is, nobody knows them outside of diehard fans. Most non-diehard fans, most casuals know Enzo and Cass. They were one of the top merch sellers the entire time they were in the company.
Not one of, for at least a year there, they were the top merch seller with the New Day. Those girls in the room shirts, like, they went like hotcakes. All that How You Doing merch, like, yeah. That sold.
And the cup that said Cup of Haters, that I can't front, that was kind of funny. But, yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know, man. I'm real curious. That's going to be a hell of a week, though. We might need to do something big for that week because, you know, you got... AEW Wednesday's first show, and then the first new SmackDown show on Fox that Friday. That's a big week, bro.
That's an important week. Also, like, you know, I'm glad you brought up the first episode of SmackDown on Fox, because I said in our last episode, and I'm going to repeat it again, because this is going to be our SummerSlam preview and blah, blah, blah.
Don't be surprised if you don't get some of the endings you were expecting at SummerSlam, because I'm expecting a really hard reset come October on a lot of fronts.
Okay.
Like, I think come up, for example, this wild card thing that they've been experimenting with, I think come October that's going to be done.
I think so too.
Which means the rosters are going to stabilize, which means you're going to start seeing more of some of these people that they've been slowly exposing you to.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, like, expect a heavy dose of some, like, Apollo Crews, Ali, Buddy Murphy in the mid-card of SmackDown.
Say that last name again one more time for me.
That Australian guy, he was on that 205 show.
Well, speaking of Buddy Murphy.
The best kept secret?
Best kept secret. Did you hear what happened on SmackDown?
You mean when he was the bravest man in the room and stood up to an Islander?
Let me tell you something. Buddy got his ass beat.
Yeah, he did.
Like, call the square.
Yeah, he did.
But,
yeah, he did.
But he had some balls to stand up in that man's face and smile in his face. So that's a crazy Australian talking to a crazy Samoan. So that's, yes, that's it. That is that. Those wars, the haka dances you see, that's like those were those wars built between those islands. So, dog, if they give me Buddy Murphy versus Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, I won't ask for nothing else for the next year.
That's not true, but like,
not
you
wrestling
know,
wise. Oh, actually,
I mean, that's not true, but like, no, I'm no. glad that you think that.
Look, man, y'all know how hard I stand for Buddy Murphy, and I'm gonna say I texted this to Kyle the other day, and he almost disowned me. So I'm gonna say it on the air because of that. I think Buddy Murphy is every bit the wrestler Kenny Omega is.
I didn't almost disown you for saying that.
But
I just said it was
a big shock. Yes.
I just said that was a bold statement.
I think he's just as good in the ring. I think he's every bit as good. The only difference is Kenny has full freedom and full creative control and can wrestle those marathon-ass matches. In fact, I think that Buddy is better than Kenny in one major aspect, and it's something I've criticized Kenny for forever, is that Kenny is not good at bridging the gap between people who aren't as talented as him. So when you see him wrestle a guy like Okada or Naito, they're the most amazing matches you've ever seen in your life. But when he wrestles a guy in the middle who's not as talented as those guys, the matches always look clunky. Go back and look at his match
Penta.
With Cody. Cody.
And Penta's good. And that's the thing. Penta's really good. But they had no chemistry.
Murphy has great matches with the guy who can't wrestle, or he'll have great matches with the guy who's amazing in the ring, like Aleister Black. Buddy Murphy is, I'm telling you, he's a superstar.
I mean, I will be the first to admit that I think Kenny Omega is mildly overrated by the fan base, but I still think that that is a bold claim. I'm not prepared to sit here and argue against it, but I am also not prepared to co-sign it.
I'm fine with that. So, speaking of that, I think we can lead into
Free Marty.
Marty. By the way,
Free Marty.
By the way, the great Ring of Honor Exodus is upon us. So, eventually the main event is going to be Matt Taven versus Joe Koff.
No, because now that the Exodus is upon us, like, on behalf of the Outsider's Edge, I need us to free Marty, free Taven, free the rest of the kingdom. I need us to free Jay Lethal. Free Roosh, free Bandito. Like, set them free. Die quietly, Ring of Honor. Die quietly. Your entire promotion, like, fell apart in the span of 12 months. And it's really remarkable. I want a wrestling documentarian to, like, document the rise and fall of Ring of Honor from the standpoint of where that company was this time last year on the heels of All In to where that company is right the fuck now, a company that is so sad that we're like, when are Flip Gordon and Marty Scurll and Dalton Castle, like, free from this company?
That's so good. Give us free, as a young man once said. But it's not just SummerSlam this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. It's also NXT TakeOver Toronto.
Bro.
Technically, NXT TakeOver Toronto, too. Matt Riddle about to get his ass beat. If he keep talking about these legends, they're going to jump his ass. He better watch out.
Yo, man, I don't know. I wouldn't want no smoke with Matt Riddle. Like, I've seen him in the octagon.
One-on-one, not at all. But, like, if he can't beat, like, seven of the motherfuckers.
I don't know, man. They old. Like, he young. They old.
I'm talking about the young old ones, like Book and Lance and Jericho.
Hold up. He admitted he don't want no smoke with Book. He prefaced that shit with, like, Book, I don't want no smoke. He knows Book. Like, Book been to prison. Book knows how to get fucking down.
What's that movie where the dude was like, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High,
there
bro.
You go, yeah, that's what he did to Book.
Fuck you, you're cool, and fuck you, I'm out of here.
So yeah, it is the TakeOver Toronto, and by the way, this is TakeOver Toronto 2. Hey, can we give them an applause that Uncle Paul finally put two women's matches on TakeOver?
That would have happened a long time ago too. Like,
what was the last one? Was it in England, London, when they had Asuka and Emma?
Somebody's debut. Like, it was when somebody had debuted because they were not in the title match.
It was Ember's debut because Ember fought against Billy Kay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I knew it was somebody's big debut.
So. I don't know how up to date you are, but I know you can talk about these five matches because their feuds have been going on for a while. So we're gonna start off with one of these aforementioned matches. The better half of the Garganos, we have Candice LeRae, finally getting a push. God, she's been there like 7 years, and she's fighting the epileptic Asian. Can I trademark that?
Yeah, of course.
If you've seen her interest, like, bro, like, God bless you if you have epilepsy. Because, like, that shit just be going, bro. But Io Shirai. So, heal Io with that.
You know, I know Buddy's nickname is Best Kept Secret, but, like, Candice is really the best kept secret in
She's
the
not
WWE
a secret,
right
though.
Now.
Everybody know. She's not a secret. Everybody know.
Like, all I'm saying is I'm going to pick Candice to win just because it's taken forever for them to finally push her, and I think that she needs this win for that push to continue, and so I'm going to pick Candice on this.
That's exactly why she's going to lose. For everything you just said. She needs it more than Io, and we've waited for so long for her to have this moment, and Io's going to win. Just because
they're gonna Johnny her. They're gonna Johnny her.
That's her husband, right? This is the history of that family.
All right.
We got the tag team championship match, and this one is interesting. If no other reason, Street Profits are on Raw and SmackDown regularly,
like, constantly. So they have a segment every week on each show every week.
So you got the Street Profits versus the original Undisputed Era tag team and the Red Dragons, is it the Red Dragons or the Redragons?
I've always called them Red Dragon.
Same here. Yes, Red Dragon, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish.
The reason I'm torn on this one because part of me wants to pick Red Dragon and like Undisputed Era to leave with all of the titles.
I had that thought too.
But another part of me feels like because I think the hard reset comes in October, and that's when I think the Street Profits, I think right now they're going to be heavy machinery. They're going to be on both shows, and they're going to get matches eventually. As we get closer to October, they'll start getting matches with some of these teams that they have segments with and blah, blah, blah. But I think it won't be until they do the hard reset and SmackDown moves to Fox that Street Profits officially full-time transition to the main roster. And so because of that, I think they hold on to the belts here.
So I picked the Street Profits as well. Only because that exposure they're getting is huge for not only them as a team, but for NXT in general. And while I want to pick O'Reilly and Bobby Fish.
Yeah, because they have those tag team titles on display
every time.
Fucking center.
Yes.
Over the jumpsuits, like when he's holding the cup, he's holding it off to the side so you can see that shiny NXT belt. Like, that shit is front and fucking center, which is also probably a carrot because I think that FX1 is going to start carrying NXT soon.
Yeah, I will double down on that as well, too. I'd buy some of that stock. The other reason I'm picking the Street Profits is because for them to be looking the way they are in Raw, and for them to lose in their first real title defense, would look really. And I know they've defended against Lorcan and Birch, but that would look really bad. So.
Yeah, no, you're right, and like, it's one of those situations where if they lose, I will call this right now. If they lose that match, because I expect that match to obviously happen before the triple threat match. If they lose that match, Roddy wins, Adam wins, Undisputed Era walks away from that show holding all the belts. If they lose that match, then...
I actually think that there's... Okay, the next match is NXT North American Championship match between Velveteen Dream, the champion, Pete Dunne, and Roddy Strong. I actually think that if O'Reilly and Bobby Fish win, Roddy's going to lose, and that's going to start the breakup.
Interesting.
Because just a few months ago, before the Matt Riddle match he had at the last takeover that Roddy had, Roddy and Adam Cole had real beef.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that, yes.
And Roger Strong is an alpha. He's always been an alpha. He's always been by himself for the majority of his career,
long time fans will remember that's what broke up the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, is that him and Kevin Steen couldn't work together anymore.
I didn't even know that shit, so there you go.
That was, I think, Mount Rushmore 2.0. The original one was Adam Cole and Kevin Steen, but Roddy Strong joined them at some point, and Roddy's an alpha male dick, so that didn't work out very well.
Never heard of either of those groups, but okay. Works for me.
It was them and the Young Bucks.
Hey, I learned something tonight.
It was a PWG thing.
Definitely would have known that shit. But I think we might be seeing Adam Cole, Roger Strong feud coming. But for this match, because I picked O'Reilly and Fish, I picked Roddy Strong to win this match.
So
Because I picked O'Reilly and Fish to lose, rather, I should say.
Well, if O'Reilly and Fish win, I think Roddy wins this match. Mm-hmm. Hi, Roddy. if the Street Profits retain, which is what I think is going to happen, then my prediction is actually Pete Dunne, because I expect Pete Dunne to transition to the North American NXT more full time and eventually transition to the main roster pretty quickly here.
And
I think they know what they have with him.
I think they know what they have with all three of these guys, and I think both of us feel like and know that Dream isn't leaving with the championship.
No. Dream's run with this particular belt has come and run its course. If he stays in NXT much longer, I see the only belt him chasing after at this point is the actual one.
Yeah.
I'm not even necessarily saying he's going to win it. I'm just saying, if they keep him in NXT for any significant length of time moving forward, then I think at this point he's a upper card. I'm only going after the NXT championship.
So, NXT Women's Championship, we got Shayna Baszler, the longtime champ, as my daughter calls her, since Ronda Rousey is the baddest woman on the planet, Shayna Baszler is the meanest woman on the planet. That's what my daughter calls her. Versus Mia Yim. Hey, Mia.
I'm going to pick your girl. And here's why I'm a pick your girl. I'm a pick your girl because I think Shayna finally got to go. Like, it's time. She got to go. They need her up there.
It's time. And yes, they do need her. But I'm picking Mia too. But the reason I'm picking Mia is because Shayna and Mia live together in real life. So I think Shayna knows. Shayna probably pushed for Mia to win this match. Because she knows, one, I've had the belt forever. And two, Mia can handle being
champ. I mean, she is the HBIC.
That's such, like, look, I'm not a fan of that name. Only because, like, don't be putting everything in public, yo. Like, that's one of the things we talk about in private. Don't be giving, as the big homie James Boy from Social Suplex, shout out to my homie James from Social Suplex, like, don't be talking like that around company, okay? You only talk a certain way around family. Don't talk that way around company. All right?
She's just letting everybody know. She's just letting everybody know.
I guess so. Head Batty. And then Head Batty in charge. Like, the first time she... I love me some Miriam. And the first time she said it out loud, I laughed so hard. I was like, Head Batty. Like, come on, baby. Like...
Nah. Blazing Batty was like, that was catchy. That Blazing was catchy. Batty
works. Yes, I liked
like Batty. That was catchy. But if you're gonna be the HBIC, no, we know what that shit is. New York taught us what the fuck that means. We know what that's talking about.
Dog, and I don't mean for this to be a bash Mia day because I love Mia. Like, I love her to death.
You know, she's your boo.
She's my boo. But like the HBIC, and then like boo, like stop throwing up the Wu-Tang. Like, you not from New York. Like, you from the Bay. Like, what is up with your Wu-Tang fascination? I guess you gotta have something for the crowd to throw up.
Yo, millennials love Wu-Tang, though. Like, millennials love Wu-Tang.
Millennials love what they think Wu-Tang is. They can't name you a Wu-Tang song.
They can't even tell you what Cream stands for.
Ask a millennial to name more than three members of the Wu-Tang.
And tell them they can't name either Red, Meth, or ODB.
They don't even know RZA, who's the damn leader. But yeah, okay, enough of, you know, back in my day. the main event, and I get that they're not calling it what the match is called, but it's actually a Three Stages of Hell match. Johnny Gargano versus the champion, Adam Cole, Bebe. So the first match is going to be a regular match. And I love the way Adam Cole like described how it was going to be a regular match. Second match is going to be a street fight. And the third fall, which we know is going to go to the third fall, will be decided by William Regal right there on the spot. So who you got?
Adam Cole, hashtag Bebe.
He's graduated to a hashtag.
I got Adam Cole. Johnny had the belt. They did the thing. And it's done.
I agree with you.
Kind of over. Like, honestly, and it's not his fault, but, like, I'm kind of over Johnny in NXT. Like, I need Johnny to go to 205 or SmackDown or Raw.
Please go literally to
anywhere else. Please, because like he's done everything that there is to do in NXT, and I know like he's proud of being there and talking about, oh, I'd love to like stay here and blah blah blah, and it's like, that's great, bro, like it's awesome, but like it's real stale now because you've got nothing else to do.
Please go to 205. My God, Gargano versus Gulak at WrestleMania. I think Brian just woke up out of his sleep and got a heart on. That's Clive for those of you who aren't in the know. Yeah, I think Adam Cole wins too. Because it just makes more sense.
Yeah.
It just makes more sense. And so what we just predicted here, the three main championships in the company will all be, that have all been held for long reigns, Adam Cole's gonna be the same, but I mean, Gargano's been top guy forever. Mm-hmm. But the top of the company essentially is going to be drastically different.
Here's why that makes sense. This year, SummerSlam's takeover is in Toronto, But this is normally around the time of a Takeover Brooklyn, and yeah. this is the restart of the NXT calendar.
Yeah.
So it makes perfect sense that a lot of this long-term shit that they've been brewing for ever and a day is going to finally start coming to roost and bear out.
Well, for the past 4 years, Takeover Brooklyn has been their WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's their version of it.
It don't feel like it this year because it's not Brooklyn, I guess, but it feels big, but like those Takeover Brooklyn cards made you feel like I cannot miss this. And I think it's something to you about it feeling stale because it's the same people.
Well, I was going
to
say some of that is because the roster has been very stable for the last couple of months. Like for the first time in a long time, there has been very, very, very little turnover amongst the NXT roster. And so to the point where some of the new talents that we know they've got still aren't even on television. Like, they haven't even started putting Kushida on television yet.
I mean, well, he's had some matches, but yes, I get your point. Yeah, Kushida, that's the interesting thing for me going forward. You have guys like Kushida, you have guys like Keith Lee, you have guys like Dijakovic, you have guys like Damian Priest, and then I'm not even mentioning the 8 guys that were in the breakout challenge that, like, all need TV time. You know?
Yeah,
that's,
well, that's
a lot of people.
They need, and so.
And that's just the men.
Well, they've got women like Chelsea Green.
Yep.
Is ready, like, at any time.
Casey's
ready at any time.
Deonna Purrazzo, who was for them.
Deonna's like she's ready whenever they want to go.
She's been ready.
Yeah, so like they've got plenty of talent. So thing is, it's honestly time for a round of call ups is what it comes down to.
Call ups are 2 hours, one of the two.
Yeah, one of those two things has to happen. Either you got to call people up, or you got to expand your show and allow for more TV time.
But to be fair, coming from a guy who grew up around UNC and Duke teams, that's a good problem to have.
Oh, absolutely. No, like that is a problem that anybody would want to have. We're so stacked with talent that we don't have enough television to go around for everyone. But you know what amazes me about it, though? At the same time that they've got so much depth, the main roster, as we transition into the SummerSlam preview, for some reason, in spite of the overwhelming amount of talent on it, feels really shallow.
Like, there's go in more depth of that.
Well, like, to me, there's so much talent on the actual main roster. But to me, like, when I think about the main roster, I feel like if I were to go division by division, each division feels really, really shallow. Like, they've got – I'll start with the Raw Tag Division. At the top of that division, you've got the OC, you've got the Usos, you've got the Revival.
And the War Raiders.
But here's my thing, though. I wouldn't even put them at the top because they're back to – they're kind of Braun Strowman right now. They got super pushed, and now they're just like fighting jobbers again.
Right, because they don't want them to look bad yet. They want them to keep looking strong. Because when they get that big, crazy push out of nowhere, you can say, oh, well, they've been undefeated for – yeah.
Yeah. So they're kind of in the middle. But then there's like a long drop-off after that. Yeah, and then you could do the same thing on SmackDown. You've got the Planeteers, and you've got the New Day, and then
– Heavy Machinery.
Heavy Machinery, and below them, that's it.
Is that it? There's no other tag teams that we can think of?
On SmackDown, I can't think of another tag team on SmackDown.
Not a consistent tag team, yeah, you might
nope.
be right.
They had every women's tag team in the women's tag team match on Raw this week. Like, literally all of them. All 4 of them. So there's only 4 people on that roster. And by putting 4 tag teams together, that means that each singles women's roster is the women's singles roster on Raw is Becky,
yes.
Lacey,
yes.
Naomi, who don't ever get to be on TV.
Nope.
Natty.
Yeah, and Dana Brooke don't put her on TV. She's on. She's
and Ruby Riott's right hurt.
Yes.
Ruby Riott's hurt, and so is Sarah Logan.
Yes.
On SmackDown, the singles women's roster for SmackDown is Charlotte.
Uh-huh. Bayley.
Bayley.
Ember Moon.
Ember Moon.
Liv Morgan.
Liv Morgan. That's the entire singles. So you see what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of talent as a whole on the main roster. But when you actually look at the current state spread out across both shows, division by division, and kind of look at the state of each section of the card, all of the divisions are shallow in a way that creates bad repetitive television.
I got it.
Because if I've only got three teams in my tag team division that are competitive and worth a damn, I have to recycle the matchups of those three teams against each other all the fucking time because I ain't got shit else. I got to put them against jobbers.
But I think the fix for that and the bigger issue of that and not using the fix is that you have to make everybody credible in their own way. So let's look at the OC, for example. The OC for the majority of the past year and a half has been an afterthought, a laughingstock.
And I give them a lot of credit. Like, before you finish giving them the props that they deserve for finally being given a credible gimmick, I give them a lot of credit for, like, making what they could out of what little they were given. Like, turning that whole Good Brothers thing and the nerds, like, making that get over at all, even a little bit, deserves some credit because they were given literally nothing.
But they're vets, so they're not going to complain about being given a spot like some of the newer guys would.
Only thing they were given was badass entrance music.
But they're a perfect example of all you need is 3 weeks to get a team credible again.
But I'll give you a foil example of you have to do it the right way. Hawkins and Ryder. All you need is a couple weeks to make a team credible again, but if you make them credible again as a comedy, then it's only going to be a short-term credibility.
But that's a babyface. That's a babyface heel problem because babyfaces are so weird in wrestling in general, but especially WWE, which is so formulaic, because your babyfaces either are going to be a badass or they're going to be a comedy team or they're going to be just a goody-two-shoes wrestler. So Hawkins and Ryder don't really have much chances. And when you've had a 3-year gimmick of Hawkins losing every match, it was bound to be a comedy thing.
Well, and Ryder lost all – let's be real. Zack Ryder lost all of his fucking matches before he teamed back up with
her. Can we speak anyway about Zack Ryder for a second? Zack Ryder
outkicked his coverage and married Chelsea Green.
Besides that.
Outkicked his coverage.
He is one of the most interesting wrestlers in modern wrestling history because – he's constantly been given nothing, but he has two major WrestleMania moments when most people don't even have one WrestleMania singles match. He's got two major WrestleMania moments. Like, this is crazy. Like, but then he's not on the show for 95% of the year. He is one of the most fascinating human beings in wrestling history. But nonetheless.
And has a great story when you really get back down to the brass tacks and talk about how he overcame childhood cancer.
Yeah,
he's
a cancer survivor, yes.
Like, great fucking story. And then he made himself internet famous so that he could finally be on TV. And, like, so many great things about his story. You're absolutely right. Like, when he finally retires, I really hope they do, like, a WWE 24/7 documentary on the Zack Ryder story.
I would,
like,
watch that.
Fascinating motherfucker.
He might be fascinating enough to get a movie.
I mean, you know, Paige got a movie. And I'm not saying Paige didn't have a good story. She did. She had a good story.
Paige
but
is
like,
a good story.
That story's got a lot more shit to it. Like, there's a lot of meat to them potatoes.
The beauty of the Knights of the story about the Knights is that the story isn't about Paige. The story is about Zack. It's about her brother. That's the story. Paige is just the one who made it out. But the interesting part is about Zack. So, and I don't know if you've seen Fighting With Family. By the way, the movie's excellent.
I haven't gotten to it yet, but I've heard nothing but wonderful things. I've heard it's really, really good.
I stayed away from it for a long time because I was skeptical. And I shouldn't have been because the casting was impeccable. But it is fantastic. It's really good. It's
I fully intend to see it. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Let's get to SummerSlam, man.
Yeah, let's get to this.
So two things that shocked me about the SummerSlam card. One, it's a lot less matches than I expected. Two, where the fuck the tag matches?
They were all on Raw and SmackDown this week.
That's a good answer. That's a damn good answer. I have no rebuttal. That's an excellent answer.
I'm not saying they should have been, but, like, that's where they were. They had the women's tag titles with all of the women's tag teams on Raw. They had the OC versus the Usos versus the Revival on Raw. They had the Planeteers versus the New Day on SmackDown.
That's a good point.
Like, they were all on television.
That's a damn good point. I have no rebuttal. Okay, so, as always, as the way I go through this,
non-title matches first, yes. And then we'll get to the title matches in order of championship prestige. Quick shout out to the championship that's not officially on the card, but we know we're going to see it.
The 48-7, 24-7, 7-11 TV champion.
Yes.
So you know he was doing the, on Twitter, he was doing the Old Town Road remix. Dog, he got a Bodak Yellow remix out now. R-Truth is the wrestler of the year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come on, bro.
Well, and you know, like, R-Truth is also, it's a joke, but it's not. R-Truth is also a great example of Black Don't Crack. You look at a picture of R-Truth from 15 years ago, and you look at a picture of R-Truth right the fuck now, and the only difference is his dreads have grown longer. That is literally the only difference.
R-Truth will be 50 years old next year.
And he looks like he's fucking 30.
It's amazing.
Still got every one of them abs. Got like 6 kids and still got every one of them abs.
That pisses me off so much. Like, bro, eat a carb. Like, bruh, what are you doing? Ugh. I hate people in shape. Speaking of people in shape.
Skinny bitch.
One Dolph Ziggler. Boy, when you... a great example of ask and you shall receive. Dolph wanted the smoke, and he got every ounce of it.
Goldberg, let me tell you why he's going to win. Let me tell you why he's going to win.
Oh, let me get comfortable for this.
Oh, you're going to love it, because it's so ridiculous, and it'll probably never happen. But he's going to win because Matt Riddle's going to come out of the crowd and knee Goldberg in the fucking face.
So he's going to pull a Matt Hardy? And just shoot on Goldberg?
He's just going to knee him in the fucking face.
Oh,
we're going to get Matt Riddle versus Goldberg at Survivor Series.
Dog, I want so bad for Matt Riddle to say, fuck it, I'm going to come backstage for SummerSlam. And just so he can see him, I want that, because they've never met.
Yeah, I know.
Dog, just imagine that first meeting. And by the way, so a lot of things in wrestling, of course, we're programmed to think everything's a work, even the shit they say like in real life. This is a shoot.
Matt Riddle don't like Goldberg, y'all. Like, Goldberg specifically. Like, the shit with the other veterans is a different thing, and it's related to different things, but, like, Matt Riddle don't like Bill Goldberg. Period. At all. And not even doesn't just not like him. Matt Riddle doesn't respect Goldberg as a wrestler.
And that's the big part.
Respects him in terms of, like, he made a lot of money, yeah, and he was big for the business, but doesn't respect him as a performer. And it's just like, oh yeah, I mean, like, he was a big star, but, like, fuck him, he's not on my level. And that's a ballsy thing to say. And I'm not saying that, like, Matt Riddle can't back it up skills-wise, but, like, that's a ballsy thing to say when you consider Goldberg is one of the probably 10 highest earning performers of all time.
Don't talk and tweet, bro. Don't talk and tweet.
I don't know, man. He roasted the shit out of Lance Storm, though.
My feelings hurt for Lance, dog.
He spit roasted Lance. I feel bad for Lance.
Dog, he
said, Lance is so nice.
I was one of your seminars, and, like, I fell asleep, and I felt bad for you, so I told you I liked it, but no, that shit was trash. Like, oh my God. Wow. Like, that is just
savage.
It's uncalled for.
Well, especially because, like I said, Lance is such a nice guy generally, and
all Lance said was he needed to put some shoes on when he wrestles, and that he got destroyed.
Okay. Yeah, Lance's thing is just like, dude, wear shoes before you break your foot.
Enough about the Matt Riddle show. So yes, we have Goldberg versus Dolph Ziggler, and hey, shout out to Dolph Ziggler getting a big, huge match in Payday for SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Who you got?
I told you, Dolph Ziggler's gonna win because Matt Riddle's gonna need Goldberg in space.
Oh, you was for real?
I mean, I'm gonna put it down because it's a ridiculous left field prediction, and you need those at SummerSlam.
Nothing is more left field than Ruby Riott's gonna win the Women's Royal Rumble. Shout out to Carl. Where is Carl this week, by the way?
This week, I was told that Carl is still in Africa. He's made his way to Zimbabwe.
Oh, snap. Okay. Yeah, well, Africa, there's a lot of space for you to go visit, so you'll be there for a while.
Yes, of course.
Goldberg, dog. If the match goes 2-3 minutes, I'd be shocked. And the best part about it is, Dolph Ziggler is going to bump his ass off. If you think Shawn bumped crazy for Hogan, the bumps that Dolph Ziggler is gonna do for Goldberg. Oh my God, it's gonna be worth the price of admission just to see the bumps. Next we have Finn Balor, who's gonna get murked by the Fiend.
Oh yeah,
it's not even a match. He's gonna get murked.
No. This match will last less than 10 minutes. This match will probably last less than 5 minutes.
Agreed.
Eventually, this will culminate in the Demon versus the Fiend, which is a weird way of them trying to correct how badly they fucked up Bray Wyatt versus Finn the first time.
You know what's amazing? Mm. Bray Wyatt had the greatest year and a half ever. Because he was told he had to do dress essentially in drag. He got the mumps.
Fucked Charlie.
No, not Charlie. JoJo.
JoJo. I'm sorry. Not right. You're right. JoJo.
Had almost a year and a half off. And then got back to get the same feud, but as the person he wanted to be the whole time. And got a new kid, baby kid out of it. Like, Bray's living his best life.
Yeah, completely reinvented that character, which was desperately needed because, like, poor writing over many, many years culminated in, like, a real stale and bad character.
I never had a problem with the writing. It was always the booking because the things he was saying wasn't matching his outcomes in the ring. But the things he was saying were still compelling to me. Because nobody else, much like Aleister Black now, nobody else looked or sounded like Bray. So even if the shit didn't make sense, it was still striking.
When I think poor writing, though, I think of, like, moments where Bray Wyatt storylines always started really strong and then ended really terribly. Agreed. So I think, like, his WWE title run and the dissolution of the Wyatt family, the beginning of that, on its build to the road to WrestleMania, was amazing.
Yeah.
Was amazing. Everything after they dropped Luke Harper from that storyline was awful. Right down to the cockroaches being projected onto the ring.
You know, my biggest part, the easiest fix for that issue would have been simply this. Why was Randy the face in that scenario?
Yeah, you're right. He shouldn't have been. He fucking infiltrated their organization for the only purpose to destroy them from within. And then burn down their compound. Burn this motherfucking house down. So but he's a good guy.
If that would have been the beginning of a Bray face turn, I don't think we'd look at it as bad as we do.
No, you want to know why we were always going to hate it, or at least a certain segment of us was always going to hate it? Luke Harper should have been in that fucking WrestleMania match. That should have been a triple threat match. Like, and I don't even just say that from a, like, standing for Luke standpoint. I say that because the way that it was written, it was perfect. It was fucking perfect. Have Luke and Randy face off at No Way Out because Luke is calling Bray out is calling Randy out for trying to destroy it, and it forces that wedge between them and blah, blah, blah. Like, it just made perfect sense. Have all three of them face off against each other.
And Luke take the pin because he knows he's take the pin.
Yep, Luke can take the pin against whichever one of them you want to have the belt leaving WrestleMania.
If Jack Swagger can have a world title match at WrestleMania, Luke Harper could.
Yeah, especially because, again, like,
and
that was...
It made sense.
It made sense, and that was from, like, the best year of booking for SmackDown in, like, at least a decade.
Yeah.
Like, that year of writing from the beginning of that, from the beginning of the brand split up to that point was so good.
And we never got that proper Bray versus Harper feud.
Nope. And that was the way to do it.
Yeah. Because we'll never be able to see them separately until they feud and get it out.
Yep.
So, okay. Next, we got the Legend versus Legend match. We have the Queen versus, what do they call them, Trish? Now, does she have a nickname?
Oh,
the Hall of Famer.
I think they wanted to give her some kind of a nickname, but I can't remember what that is. I don't know. I guess I'm going to pick Trish because it's never a good idea to pick against a Hall of Famer in one of these matches.
Well, let me tell you why I'm picking Charlotte. Because Trish has announced this is going to be her last match.
Oh, I did not hear that. Well, then, yeah, definitely Charlotte, because Trish is, if nothing else, Trish is a believer in the business, and she knows that you always go out looking at the lights.
She is a worker in every sense of the word, and she didn't grow up one. She learned to be one, but she has earned her stripes. True Hall of Famer, and
Now that I know that, she's tapping out to the figure eight, or she's taking the natural selection.
That might be the biggest pop of the night when she comes out. Because she's from Toronto.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's not a might be. That's going to be the...
Well, I don't know. Kofi and Becky are going to get big. And even
they are, but because of who Trish is in Toronto, she's going to get the pop of the night. All
right, so next we got Shane versus Kevin Owens, and if Kevin Owens loses, he'll quit. Here's my issue with this match.
Shane?
No, well... Thank you for that. Give some respect to the best in the world.
All the respect in the world for Kevin Owens.
Wrong best in the world. Why isn't this an I Quit match?
I thought it was an I Quit match. No. Everything about the build has made this like out to be.
This is a regular singles match that if Kevin loses, he has to quit. If you make this an I Quit match, number one, you put Shane in his perfect environment, because we all know Shane is much better when he's wrestling in a nose barred environment. Number one, number two, I Quit matches have finality to them, and number three, you can make if Shane were to quote unquote win, he can say I made Kevin quit, not the stip made him quit. I made him quit. It just would have been a better story. Nonetheless, Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon, if KO loses, he has to quit. Who you got?
I mean, the stipulation leads you to believe KO has to win, which is why he probably won't, but I'm going to pick him to win.
Well, unless Kevin Steen and El Generico are making a comeback on October 4th,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure Kevin Owens is going to win his match.
Yeah, so like I got to pick KO here.
What do you think about Kevin Owens being the guy to eventually get Shane McMahon out of power?
I mean, if you absolutely insist on continuing to do powerful McMahon versus babyface wrestler, KO makes the absolute most sense as the person to be in that role, because... So, like, Stone Cold worked because he was seen as an everyman. Kevin Owens is way more everyman to me in a lot of ways than even Stone Cold ever was. But Kevin Owens has also been organically accepted by the fan base. Like, people boo him because he's good at his job, not because they don't like him.
Agreed.
And so, like, if you want someone who's organically over to play the part, then... Might as well be KO. At least he knows how to cut a fucking promo. even when he changes alignment and make it not sound awful.
Okay, so let's run through these championship matches. For once, we have a Cruiserweight Championship match with two people you've actually seen wrestle. You have Drew Gulak, your 205 Live champion.
Yes.
Against Oney Lorcan.
Okay, so like, I'm going to pick Drew Gulak to keep the title, but part of me wants Oney Lorcan to win the title just for the twist.
For the tweets.
Just for the Twitter machine. Because Oney Lorcan's Twitter machine is so wonderful and absurd. It makes no sense at all. Ever.
I'm Ricky and Clive tonight. Clive was like, apparently all you got to do to have a good Twitter account is just put everything in uppercase. That's all you need to do.
And just say random shit. Like, he just says random-ass shit and puts it in all caps in sentence form.
But think about this. Any man who chooses the name Oney Lorcan clearly got a little something wrong with him.
I mean, his name on the fucking indies was Biff.
Biff Busick, yes. So not much better.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, Gulak's winning. Because I'm holding... So, very clearly...
But props to Oney for getting on the SummerSlam card.
Absolutely.
If there's anybody that I want to stand and applaud for getting on that SummerSlam card, it is Oney motherfucking Lorcan.
Very clearly they're building to Gulak versus Humberto Carrillo eventually. But, dog, give me Gargano versus Gulak at WrestleMania. And, oh.
Yeah. All I'm going to say, I do have one last thing to say about Oney, though. It's great, and I mean, his Twitter is crazy, and I give him a lot of credit for that. But, like, I don't know what it is about Oney. But, like, I always am super excited when good things happen for him. Mm-hmm. I remember his first TakeOver match, and I was just like, fuck yeah, Oney's in TakeOver. He has no chance to win this match, but fuck yeah, him and Birch are going to be on this card.
And the cool thing about that match, it was against, it was when Bobby Fish was still hurt.
Yeah,
it was, and it was still, Roddy. It was Roddy and Kyle.
O'Reilly.
And that's when they had those string of damn near 5-star matches every beginning of every TakeOver. And, like, I can't remember what city it was. But the stadium booed Oney and Danny Burch out the fucking arena because they were so into the Undisputed Era.
Because it was the height of Undisputed Era popularity.
And Adam Cole didn't have a match that night, so he was ringside. He got kicked out. But as the match went on, they won that crowd over. And Oney got hurt that match because he went so hard. But, like, that is a – like, if you ever want to watch – if you enjoy tag team wrestling – go and watch the last year and a half of the Undisputed Era's tag team matches. That one in general is such a tremendously, beautifully constructed match.
And I think what the thing is for Oney, is he has mastered the ability to look like he ain't shit. And so anytime he looks good in the match, well, like, it's not even so much kind of surprise, but you naturally want to root for him because he's tailored his look to be like, all right, so I shave my head and I wear plain black trunks and, like, I don't have, like, a fancy entrance. I come out with just my, you know, one finger up and that's it. Like, that's all there is to me is I'm just this teeny, scrawny-looking, hairy white dude.
And to this day, I can name you three moves he does. The running European uppercut, the running blockbuster, and then the half and half suplex, which is his finisher. I can't tell you anything else he does, and then he dives over the ropes. I can't tell you anything he does, but every match is a fight.
I can tell you, hey oh, hey oh, hey oh, and he comes out with his one finger in the air, and I'm just like, all right, fuck yeah, Oney, let's go.
Absolutely. Love me some Oney Lorcan.
Yep. All right. Got to tonight, though.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The WWE U.S. Championship between, and I'm going to call him the way Clive called him, Alan Jones Styles.
Oh, Jesus.
versus Doc. I want to use the nickname I got for Ricochet on the air so bad, but I'm not gonna disrespect a man like that. So Ricochet, AJ Styles, Ricochet, U.S. Championship should be possibly the match of the night. Okay, well, that lets me know how you feel about that match. So I'll take the lead on this one. I got Ricochet winning because I always thought the AJ Styles title run was temporary anyway.
I'm going to also pick Ricochet. I'm not as, like, firm on that pick as I was before he got hurt, but, like, I guess I'm going to still pick Ricochet. I don't know why, but I'm real. Well, I do know why. It's because, like, I like Ricochet in the ring as a performer, but, like, Ricochet doesn't interest me because he can't talk at all. So, like, I don't care. Rey Mysterio, kind like, as someone who grew up, I'm a huge fan of Rey. I don't mean to say this in a terrible way. But because of the way that they booked Rey his entire career, I have become so desensitized to the underdog storyline. Like, the little teeny tiny guy who gets the shit kicked out of him doesn't do it for me anymore. I watched SmackDown for too many years and watched Rey Mysterio and The Big Show have too many feuds to be moved by Ricochet just being a little guy who flips around.
The beauty of this is, though, Kyle... AJ and Ricochet the same damn size. So,
oh, I know. Like, it'll be a good match. Yeah. It's going to be a good match. I'm just not big into the story. It's going to be a good match.
That's fair. Speaking of not being into the story, there's no story behind this match, but you know what? It'll be fun in the ring. The SmackDown Women's Championship match between Bayley and Ember Moon.
You're absolutely right. There is zero story to that match.
And let Ember have more than 5 minutes on SmackDown. Every match she has, they rush the hell out of it. Like, let her get some time. Goodness.
I feel like she's going to win.
Me too. I pick her to win.
I pick her to win, and I pick Bayley to turn.
I pick Sasha to come back.
Maybe. But I pick Bayley to turn. I like something about the way that this has been booked, and like the part of the problem is all of Ember's segments are rushed, and that is a problem of I feel like whoever's currently booking SmackDown has recently been on Raw's booking team because it feels like you're trying to cram 3 hours worth of stuff into a 2 hour show.
Okay.
And a lot of their segments, like, the last couple of weeks, for example, the main event segment, if you will, has started with 3 minutes left in the fucking show and has been like quick cut camera angle shit because they're overbooking and they're always short on time. So Ember Moon segments have always been a lot of like really, really rushed stuff to get to the setup so that she can do the eclipse, and then her music hits and out she goes. But the way that this story has just kind of been written, of Bayley kind of being the vet and Ember getting one over on her and blah, 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 I feel like Ember wins the title and then Bayley snaps like, this bitch did not just take my fucking title. And she loses her shit.
I am curious to see what a world with Bayley as a heel.
I think it would be a better world. I think it would be a better world. I want to hear Hug Life turn jaded. I want to hear the jaded hug promo. I used to come out here and hug these fucking kids and kiss your babies and put up with all of this bullshit. And what do I get? Oh, I'm boring and I have no edge and I have no personality and blah, blah, blah.
Here's the
only... I've been disrespected.
The only negative of that is because I would love to see that. The only negative of that is, if we're going to ever see that Bayley-Sasha feud...
I gave up on Bayley and Sasha as a feud. I've given up.
I haven't. But if we're ever going to see it, Sasha has to be the heel. So
absolutely. But 2017 made me give up. 2017 made me give up. You can't, like, they teased us with that feud no fewer than a dozen times. And I don't even
mean the entire year.
And I don't even mean teased like they exchanged glances. I mean teased like physical altercations.
Yeah.
Costing each other matches.
Yeah.
All of that shit. And then just nope. We're not going to go there. And so I've given up.
So, one match that didn't have a build-up, another match that, gotta admit, has had a really interestingly good build-up, the Raw Women's Championship match, which will be contested in a submission match between the man herself, Becky Lynch, and that other Canadian chick who I have to say
y'all, let it sink in. Y'all, let it sink in. Your boy Rance just paid a compliment to a feud involving Natty. Your boy Rance just said that the build-up to a match involving Natty and Becky Lynch has been interesting.
Let it be known that I'm going to strike this from the record.
I'm just putting that one out there.
No, it actually has been good, and Natty still is the absolute worst human being in the history of human beings
the
microphone.
Here's the problem. Like, my problem with Natty always is I want so badly to like Natty because I like Natalia as a person.
Okay.
She's solid enough as a performer in the ring. She cares a lot about the business. She does a lot to help train the younger girls. Like, I like her a lot as a human. She might have less charisma than her uncharismatic cardboard box uncle. And that's saying something. She might be worse on the microphone than the Hitman.
Well, there's only one human being that's worse on the microphone than Natty. That's Kalisto.
Kalisto should never be allowed to touch a microphone. We have taken away his speaking privileges.
You have. 205 has not. But, look, Natty's, if you take away what she's saying on the mic, her actions have been spot on excellent.
Well, and the problem with what she's saying on the mic isn't what she's saying. The problem is
she has no charisma.
She has no. That's the only problem. It's not what she's saying. It's just that she has no charisma and can't deliver it.
Becky can put me in the disarmor, and she can break my arm. I'm still not gonna tap even my arm is broke. Bitch, yes you are. You're gonna tap. Your arm's broke. Shut up. It's stupid. Don't say nothing else. Like what? Shut up.
I'm,
you know what? If she's tough enough, I should challenge her to a submissions match. But you know what? I'm not gonna challenge her to a submissions match. Bitch, what? Like, it's just not make no sense.
Well, I mean, if it makes you feel any better, she's got about as much chance of winning this match as either of us do of waking up a female. So, yeah, Becky Lynch gonna stay women's champion.
Well, I did want to have that conversation with you later, but...
I mean, if you're transitioning, I fully support you. You know that I love you no matter what.
Let me not even joke about that. Yes, Becky's winning, but I think this is going to be a much closer match than we think.
I think they'll present it as a much closer match, but, like, I mean, Becky's winning this match.
So I'm going to go to the Universal Championship first because the real championship match that needs to end the match deserves conversation. But so they want us to believe that Seth Rollins can beat Brock Lesnar after the beatings he's taken the past 2 weeks.
Don't even get me started on this whole thing. Because, like, as it is, y'all know I don't like Brock. And y'all know I don't generally care for Seth. And if there's one thing I haven't needed, I have been pushing and soldiering through Monday Night Raw consecutive weeks for a while now. I've been doing my due diligence and forcing myself to get through that shit. And if there is one thing I haven't needed on Monday Night Raw any of these weeks, and one reason why I am glad I've got the DVR with the Hulu so I can frame by frame it, is I did not need 15 minutes of Brock Lesnar beating the dog shit out of Seth Rollins. I don't need to see it. I don't care. It doesn't get me hype. because if anything, like you said, it just makes it that much less believable for anybody that Seth got a shot.
Well, okay, that's where I disagree with you. One last point. That was fine had Seth not showed up this week. But because Seth showed up this week and got further beat, makes it bad. See, you talked about that underdog thing. And this being an underdog is a very real thing that is almost a very tired trope in wrestling. Absolutely. But I think it would have worked in the sense that, one, we know Seth can beat Brock. He's beat him before. One. Two, Seth is essentially the top face on the show and has been for a good portion of time. Right?
You're right. But 2 weeks of back-to-back
atrocious
beatdowns is just like, nah.
Right. But ignore the first week. I'm saying if we would have stopped it at the second week, I mean. If we would have stopped at the first week, he got that big beatdown then, and nobody's seen him, nobody's heard from him, nobody knows nothing, and he shows up to SummerSlam, and he has...
With his ribs taped.
The DDP ribs blah, taped, blah, blah. And he has the babyface fire. Then you're like, okay, maybe we got a shot here. There, you killed all of that Monday when he came back out and got beat down again. That's the problem. That first beatdown, I think, was appropriate to show, one, Brock ain't playing with this motherfucker, and two, Seth has sympathy that night. He lost his sympathy Monday because then people saying, you stupid for coming out there.
You know, they gonna fuck around and we gonna have a deja vu with Seth where they trying so fucking hard to get people to like him that it just makes people not.
Can we talk about the irony of the fact that literally flip-flop Roman and Seth from 4 years ago, when Seth was in there, darling, and Roman couldn't get no love, and now Roman's getting all the love from everybody, but Seth is the one that they're trying to push hard to be likable. It is hilarious that my grandma
Roman only getting love. Roman only getting love because A, he not in the title picture. Because you know, if he was still in the title picture, they would be saying the same shit that they've always said.
That's fine.
But B. And I mean, it's fucked up that this is the truth, but it is. The overcoming that health scare endeared him to people in a way that he was not endeared to them before.
Let me disagree with you slightly.
It gave them a personal reason to cheer for him that they did not previously have.
Let me disagree with you slightly. I don't think it endeared them to them. I think it got them out of their own way. I think it stopped them from giving their excuse of, well, I don't like this guy because he was this or he was that, and made them actually take a look at the person. If you unbiasedly look at...
I would argue that that is the definition of endearment. Endearment means to make me like something. And if it's just removing a bias that you already have, the end result is still the same. You have made something more likable to a group.
Maybe. The way you're saying it, I disagree with, but we might be agreeing on the same thing. I just think that, again, if you look at Joe Inouye, Roman Reigns, and you take every bias away, there's no way you cannot like the guy. But because we told ourselves that, well, he was pushed over this guy, and he was going to get the push regardless, and he didn't deserve to be in the spot because he didn't do this for this. You take all that away, and you actually just get a chance to look at him, the guy, the wrestler, the performer, you will like him. And I feel like that's what cancer, unfortunately, did for him. But ever since he's been back, he's been booked in ways that have garnered him real interest. So he's been back long enough now where the cancer high is almost gone.
Well, I'm not saying the cancer high is the only reason he's still getting cheered. I'm just saying that, like, I think you underestimate the role that played in getting people more on board with him. Because the thing is, right up until he made that announcement, like, when he came out holding that title,
he got booed.
People were still actively...
Yeah.
Shitting on homie.
Absolutely.
But what the announcement did is it put perspective on I don't think it's so much look at him and you can't not like him. I think it's more so of a, well, I didn't necessarily like the way that he was utilized, but dude is incredibly talented and good at his craft and deserving of my respect. And, like, I don't want terrible things to happen to him. And you know what I'm saying? It made him not – it made him a person, not a character.
Sure. So I feel like the same thing that happened to him happened to Cena a few years ago after he was gone for a while.
Distance. Distance yes. creates perspective. And again, when Cena came back, Cena didn't immediately go into I'm challenging for world titles all the time. They acknowledged that Cena at that point had reached a level where he's kind of above always having to chase after belts. Mm-hmm. Roman has main evented 4 WrestleManias. He's at a level where he doesn't have to constantly be chasing right. after the WWE title. And by keeping him away from the WWE title, you don't have people saying that he's monopolizing the top of the card or that he's taking anybody's spot. He's a mid-card dude in high-profile matches being used to get other people over.
Right, even though he very rarely has a championship. But the overarching point was it's hilarious how the ideologies of both wrestlers have switched in the past few years.
What's interesting for me is people are finally starting to see the things that I've always said about Seth in terms of Seth is not as interesting as people make him out to be.
As a face, yeah, you're right.
Heel Seth, like smarmy, douchey Seth, was at least interesting because he was like conniving. And to be real, like, no disrespect to homie, but like homie looks like a greaseball. Mm-hmm. Like he's got the presentation of a greasy douchebag that I don't want to be around.
Yeah.
So like as a heel, totally makes sense. But face Seth isn't interesting. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Seth is a solid wrestler and Seth is great at what he does. Seth is not exciting to watch.
I disagree with that.
But, okay.
I know how you feel about him, so yeah.
But I'm trying to phrase it in the right way. Like, when I watch a Seth Rollins match, at the end of the match, I can't deny that what I saw was good, that he executed it well, blah, blah, blah. Nothing about it made me, like, want to jump out of my seat or, like, get real hype. I'm
so
just like,
Bret Hart to you.
Oh, yeah, and I've been on record, Bret Hart don't do it for me, y'all. You can hate me all you want. Bret Hart don't do it for me.
I'm saying.
All sizzle, no steak.
I'm saying. Okay, well, so then something we can really – by the way, your prediction is
– oh, my prediction is Brock.
Seth has to win because they've just built – they've put the odds so insurmountably – against Seth, that he's gonna win.
I never pick against Brock anymore because I learned my lesson. So like, I won't be upset if Seth wins.
Well, Brock's last match.
I will be upset pending the result of this next match, though.
Yeah, the WWE Championship match, 11 years in the making between Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton.
If MAGA Orton wins that match, I'm gonna lose my shit.
There are some real genuinely interesting and good reasons why Randy should win the match, but ultimately he shouldn't. And the reasons are that Kofi beating Orton right now in this spot is cool. Kofi losing to Orton, coming back up, say winning a Rumble, and then beating him and getting that next moment again is the bigger moment for him as a character. But nonetheless, Kofi is having the best face championship run we've had in almost a decade. So while he doesn't get the gravitas he'll get by just beating this dude as he would if he lost and got back and got the big win in the big moment, it's still a huge win.
Kofi Kingston is the wrestler of the year in 2019 so far. I don't give a shit what anybody says.
Well, it's between Kofi and R-Truth, I tell you that, because R-Truth had a hell of a year. But Kofi is – I'm sorry, sure. Becky.
I know Becky. Yeah, no disrespect to Becky. Like, I don't mean that. I know Becky got the big moment, Becky and Charlotte.
Kofi's
and Ron
had a better year.
Main event in WrestleMania, blah, Kofi's, blah, blah. I get that.
Kofi's had a better year.
Kofi Mania from, like – January to now has been just a solid 8 months of everybody still love Kofi.
And the best part is Kofi has reminded all of us how good he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm a big proponent of giving people credit when they deserve credit, because we're gonna trash everybody when they do something deserving of being trashed. Giving credit
Ring of Honor,
right? WWE gets destroyed every day for a myriad of reasons, but one particular reason is they don't allow the best parts of a wrestler to be shined all the time. Kofi has had this entire run from January to now August and hasn't changed one thing about him.
Nope.
He still comes out with the pancakes. He still comes out to the New Day theme. He still considers himself a part of the team. Nothing has changed about Kofi.
Unless it absolutely has to be a him alone segment, he still comes out with Ian Xavier, and they still do their group shit.
Yep.
Unless it's a part where it just absolutely has to be just Kofi for, like, to build to the one-on-ones, he still come with the group.
Yep. And he's taking on every comer. He's beating everybody. So that I really am hoping that they build up to Roman versus Kofi eventually going into the new SmackDown world in October. Because that is going to be compelling television.
You know, the way Kofi has caught lightning in a bottle reminds me in some ways of Lynn Sanity back in the day. Not fully, because unlike Jeremy Lin, Kofi wasn't an unknown. And unlike Jeremy Lin, I don't think Kofi fades away to never, like, not to necessarily. Yeah, he's not a novelty that's never going to be usable again at that level. But just the way that he went from, like, background guy to, like, top of everybody's hearts.
And if you remember, the insanity only happened because everybody was hurt.
Yep.
On the Knicks.
Yep. They were so desperate for people that they signed him from the practice squad.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he was, you know, he was on Houston's team mm-hmm. that year and got dropped. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
he was thinking about quitting basketball.
Yep,
and turned it into like 4 or 5 years as a solid role player in the league.
He was sleeping on Landry Fields' couch
because
mm-hmm. he didn't have a place to stay.
And, like, I know he's real broken up about his situation right now, but, like, man, you had a real solid run for a long time. Like, he was a solid bench player.
If you really want to go in depth about that, the show High Noon with Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre broke it down real well with Pablo being Filipino, I believe Filipino himself. Jeremy, I think it's Taiwanese or Vietnamese or something, but. They had a real deep, real in-depth conversation about it, and Pablo broke down.
It's Korean.
Who is?
I thought Jeremy Lin was Korean.
Is he? I don't know. I'm assuming here.
He's from somewhere in East Asia. His family originates from East Asia.
But yeah, Pablo broke it down real heavy. Go look that up because it's worth.
I absolutely will because I love Pablo and Bomani. So like,
it's worth the 4 minutes to see the insight that Pablo gives from a person who grew up in that household, in a household similar to his.
But yeah, so like in those regards, though, Kofi Mania reminds me a little bit of that Lin Sanity vibe. Now, I think the difference, like I said, is absolutely, I don't think Kofi is like, loses the title and then just goes back to being tag team for life.
Yeah,
he's
not going to taper off. Yeah, Kofi's made now.
Yeah, he's at least upper mid card forever now.
And truth be told, Vince
cements his Hall of Fame career.
Yes. And truth be told, Vince always knew what he had in Kofi. It's just, he knew Kofi was going to be Rob Van Dam for his life. The dude who always was good, who was always going to be a babyface, gave you some good spots, and had the complete trust of the company, but you knew what he could do. Kofi had to shed all of that to show Vince, I can do more. But throughout it all, Vince never had not had trust in Kofi. Because the only reason the New Day got to do the things they did was because Vince said, well, y'all got Kofi, so alright, why not? So now Vince has been shown and proven that Kofi gets the ball, good things happen. Kofi got Kofi in the rotation for life, bro. So, Kofi has cemented himself as a starting lineup WWE player now.
As long as he wants to be. I mean, one thing we always forget with Kofi, because he's in as good a shape as he is, Kofi and AJ Styles are pretty much the same age. Like, Kofi's like 41.
Yeah, that's the really, really unspoken secret about WWE is a lot of their top stars are a lot older than you think they are.
Miz is 38, y'all. Dolph Ziggler's like 37. Randy's like 37, 38. Now, Randy, you can believe is that old because Randy been around since he was like 22.
2002.
But like, yeah, if you go up and down the top of that card, like, shit, Roman and Seth are older than you think they are.
Roman and Seth are like 33, 34.
Yeah, like, they're almost mid-30s. Now, mid-30s is not past their prime. I'm not saying, like, they're on their way out the door or anything. I'm just saying, like, people are a lot older than you think they are. And, like, you know, one of the reasons Charlotte is starting to do more of this Legends-type shit is, like, athletically within the women's division, they start aging out sooner. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but, like, the company going to start phasing her work down as she gets closer to those like higher 30s.
Yeah, and WWE is really getting to a point where they're gonna screw themselves over if they don't build up the next level of credible top women stars, because Charlotte's beat everybody. Yep. Charlotte's beat everybody so bad to the point where the only person they could give her for
is a Hall of Famer.
Is a Hall of Famer, and not just any Hall of Famer. The consensus greatest ever of their field. So you can't bring back Lita for Survivor Series.
Well, here's the thing.
And Jackie
here's
Moore for Royal Rumble.
But here's the thing. You can't bring Lita back, period, because she can't go anymore. And like, that's really where it's they've backed themselves into the corner with Charlotte is, like, the credible women for her to face are the legends, but a lot of the legends are either no longer with us or can't go anymore.
Yeah, of note, the only ones that can still go comfortably that we look at in high esteem were Trish and Beth Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. You know who I'd like to see Charlotte face? I don't know if she can still go, and I don't know if she'd be interested, and I don't know if the match would be any good. I'd like to see Charlotte face Michelle McCool.
I would be down with that because they're very similar in stature.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if Michelle can still go. I don't know if she'd want to.
Michelle was the she was, you know, every Royal Rumble has kind of like the leader of the Rumble.
Her and Beth were the only ones that looked like, of the older women that were in the field, were the only ones that looked like, oh yeah, we can still do this. We still do this.
So, yeah, I can see Michelle coming back.
You know Taker would love it because they could travel together.
Well, that and, you know, Taker got a lifetime contract now, so they money long. They money long and good. But you know what? Give me Shayna versus Charlotte and I'll shut up because that's the one.
Yo, give me Shayna versus Charlotte and no fucking lie. You want to make Shayna Baszler real quick? Have her choke that bitch out. Mm-hmm. Have her choke that motherfucker the fuck out. I'm just gonna have her Brock Lesnar, John Cena.
And to Charlotte's credit, Charlotte's a team player. Charlotte lost to Carmella.
And to give Charlotte credit, not only is Charlotte a team player, how often does Charlotte get to go with someone that she can bump for? Because Charlotte is her dad's daughter. And if she has the opportunity to take a legitimate bump from someone, she would eat that shit up.
Who's the last person? Nikki Bella?
I mean, realistically, yeah. Like, the only time she got to take good bumps from Sasha was when they did the hardcore shit because she's so much bigger than Sasha.
She's bigger than everybody.
Yeah, and so that's what I'm saying. Like,
and that's why I said Nikki, because Nikki's a power wrestler.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Shayna could credibly suplex Charlotte, and Charlotte would love to flip for her. Charlotte would love that shit. Can you flip me to the outside of the ring?
The Fosbury flopping shit? Yeah, she'd kill it.
Oh, yeah. She, like, Charlotte is the type that just because she wants to do it would be like, do you think you could, like, belly-to-belly me over the top rope so that I could just... Because she would just want to do that. I'll flip onto your stooges.
I'm game.
I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Have Ronda make her surprise return.
Well, that's Ronda's coming back. I'm telling you, that's the real prediction of the night. Ronda's coming back after Becky beats Natty and beating the living fuck out of Becky. And I'm here for it.
I'm down.
I'm here for it. So
I'm down.
All right, man.
I mean, honestly, they're starting to back themselves into that same corner with Becky that they backed themselves into with Charlotte in terms of having her go through literally everyone and beat everyone and presenting her in such a way where she's seen as above. Like, I couldn't take a match between her and some of the women seriously on value of the presentation.
Here's the only difference, I think, though, for them is that Charlotte's been on top from the moment she got there.
Oh, absolutely.
So she's had a top-level feud with every woman. Becky has had a top-level feud with her. Like, Becky has had a feud with Bayley, or has, like, on WWE TV, unlike on main roster TV, or had a feud with Sasha, or had a feud with these people that Charlotte has overly feuded with. So that's the one positive. Like Becky versus Sasha is a WrestleMania match waiting to happen.
Yeah, if they're ever on the same fucking show.
If Sasha ever decides to come back to work.
Well, who the fuck knows if that's going to happen?
She's out here living her best life, bro. So
yeah, she is. I mean, you know what? Do you, I guess. Do you. But, I mean.
Well, what you got, man? You want to get here?
Yeah, let's tell them where they can find us.
So, you can find me at Stokely Hathaway. You can find Kyle at Dr. S'mores. You can find Carl at Outsider Curving, and you can actually find me at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in dollars. Speaking of Stokely Hathaway, shout out to Stoke. His new name is Malcolm Bivens, so he's now at Malcolm Velli. Rest in peace to the Stokely Hathaway name and Twitter handle. Still the best Twitter follower in the business.
Absolutely.
And of course, we are part of the Cheshire Radio Network, where you can
always use your head.
I got some real special stuff coming up next week for Chair Shot Radio. So be on the lookout for that. It's real special. And this is one of those real special that we say and shit don't ever happen. It's happening. So, yeah. Boom. You got that. Anything else we need to tell the people?
Nah, y'all. Other than that, just, you know, it's back to school. So, you know, make sure you send your kids back to school with all the shit they need. Make sure you treat your kids' teachers right. Also, those of you that live in the United States, you know, raise your kids to be better than the shitty shooters that we've got all over this fucking country. Hug your loved ones, y'all.
Dayton, El Paso, we're with y'all.
We love you.
Yeah.
Love you. But other than that, y'all, just remember, we here at the Outsider's Edge are some increasingly older gentlemen out here doing the best we can to not go bankrupt in this world.
A certain somebody's about to be real older in a few days.
Shit, not as old as they think. You know, doing the best we can to not go bankrupt here in this world. And, you know, sometimes we might fuck up and get our facts straight and forget which country Jeremy Lin is from. Sometimes we might say something that just really pisses you off, like Seth Rollins is kind of boring. But at the end of the day, y'all, you got to remember, we're just out here following our dreams, and you got to respect that. Because if you don't, we surely don't give a fuck.
Fuck 'em.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy SummerSlam.